Guess where I am.
Where you at?
A Panera Bread.
Oh, why am I not surprised?
Free Wi-Fi. Welcome back to In Pursuit of Purpose Podcast. It is your host, Marcus, a.k.a. Mark My Words. If you are in the room listening right now, then you have found yourself in the right place. Once again, no need to introduce, but I do want to say that we have a great show coming up for you today. We have a guest coming in today via Skype, and this guest is one that's a little bit off the beaten path from what I'm normally seeking, but nonetheless one who is passionately living out a purpose in his life. This is going to be a good interview. I think for the most part, it will broaden your horizon as far as perception and life goes. And today I'm going to bring in to the In Pursuit of Purpose podcast world is a guy that I met while working at a wilderness therapy retreat in Asheville, North Carolina. We met each other on staff together. And this young man has been serving in the United States Marine Corps for a number of years, and he has a lot of experience in travel. One of the things about this show is I talk to people who do extensive traveling because I know that opens up the wisdom and the knowledge a little bit more than what we're used to. And so today I'm bringing in a guy who not only served in the Marine Corps, he's a Marine, but just one of those, you know, red-blooded Americans who truly love the country. And I thought he'd be intriguing to have on the show because he is different. He is off the beaten path. So we're going to figure out some things about him and about his worldview, you know, from the mind of a Marine. And I think that's where we're going to go today with this show. From the mind of a Marine, we're going to be bringing in Ben Slutsky. He treats our veterans and the way that the country mishandles those who give their life for this land, protecting this land from anyone coming in. But I think my goal here is to peel back the layer beyond that, and let's see a little bit more into the mind of a Marine, what it's really like to defend the land. Are you defending the land, and does the land need defending outside of this country? That's where I want to go with it, so be tuned into it because it's going to be a little different, okay? I think it's going to be good, but nothing else needs to be said. Without further ado, sit tight, audience. And listen in for Ben Slutsky. Welcome, everybody, to In Pursuit of Purpose Podcast. With me today, I have a local colleague, comrade, a good fellow, a Marine, one who would give his life for you and for me and for this country. And I am appreciative of a man who is willing to do that. I just want to say right now, this is going to be a good show. We have in-house a guy that I found working at a wilderness therapy program in Asheville. And we have, like, as soon as we met, it was like instantaneous click, you know, it was a click sensation. And we just kind of had that mutual, natural respect for one another because of what each other is willing to do, especially in that kind of a program. And so I'm going to introduce to you no other than former and previous Marine, United States Marine, Ben Slutsky. Served in the Marine Corps. Ben, I'm going to let you tell a little bit more about yourself, man, and introduce yourself to the people.
I'm good. Glad to be on your podcast. My name is Corporal Benjamin Slutsky. I served 5 years in the United States Marine Corps, serving with two different units. I served with, my first unit was Fleet Anti-Terrorism Security Team Bravo. I spent about 2 years with them, serving as, my main job was a rifleman, but I field billets as a automatic rifleman, machine gunner, combat lifesaver marine, and tactical vehicle chief. After that, I spent some time outside of that and went to 2nd Battalion, 2nd Marines, Fox Company. I spent some time as a team leader down there and a squad leader for a little bit. I did 3 deployments total in those 5 years, and I got about 6 months ago and started working over in Wilders Therapy. So,
man, I know that Marines are like, it's hard-pressed to get Marines to get former servicemen to talk and really express, you know, what's it like being in the Marines, man, or what's it like being in the Army, or what's it like being in the Air Force, or whatever. It's really hard to pry a lot of information from you guys, and I kind of understand that, you know, but for people who may not understand, tell the listeners, Ben, who don't know, what does it mean to be a Marine?
So the Marine Corps, we pride ourselves on our core values of honor, courage, and commitment. And for some, it kind of is like this, like a recruiting slogan. But for a lot of us, it really is something that we, the number one thing is we take care of our own. There's some problems in the VA taking care of our troops when we get back. But the one thing that's never failed is that we take care of our own. You see all these, you know, YouTubers and other folks on social media who are former service members, to try and help veterans. Because, you know, like we said, when you're out there, you got the guy to your left and your right. That's it. Being the Marine Corps, I'm not going to lie, we're arrogant. We're cocky. But part of that just being a Marine, you know, we earned that title. For a lot of other folk, like, you know, in the Army, like, from what I understand, they call you soldiers and privates, you know, in boot camp. When I was in boot camp, we were not humans, you know, we were recruits, you know. And it's not to the very end of boot camp that hey, now you're a Marine, and now, like, you rate something. So it's just different breed, Marines especially. So
would you say if you're not you say you're not humans, you're recruits, would you say that the notion could be made that y'all are machines in a sense, or is that what you're not saying? Are you saying we're not machines, we're not robots, but we are?
I mean that's one thing I heard a lot, is like, service members in general, they rose, but that's not the case. But what I was talking about is we are honestly kind of treated as like less than human. And the reason for that is they break you down. They break down until you hit rock bottom. They pound you a little more. And then from there, they build you. So we always say Marines aren't born, they're made. In fact, on Paris Island, South Carolina, is where I went to boot camp, there's this big archway that says, "We make Marines."
Wow.
And it's really something that, like, you're not born a Marine. You're not born, you know, like that. You had someone, a drill instructor, has to make you into that. And, I mean, I know my 4 drill instructors were some of the hardest working folk I've ever met in my life.
I like that you say that sign you saw, it says, "We make Marines." And that's funny because that's kind of one of the things I wanted to ask is, What does it take to be a Marine?
So, it varies.
Because I'm looking, I want to look inside the mind. I'm an artist in a sense, and I'm trying, as an artist, we look inside things a lot deeper, like paintings and pictures. So I kind of ask that to kind of know, like, what does it take for someone to know what they're getting themselves into? What does it take to be a Marine? And that's kind of where I want to go with, to the process where you were at in the beginning when you were making that decision.
So it's a lot of thinking and, like, just kind of playing first because I come from a line of teachers in higher education. Both my parents was teachers. I have a sibling who has a master's degree in psychology. My grandmother was a teacher. My granddad was a principal, excuse me. And so, you know, it's a conversation you have to have with your parents at some point, you know, for, you know, the younger folk. I remember I was probably about a sophomore in high school when I kind of made that decision, you know, this is what I want to do. My uncle was a Marine. He got the end of Vietnam. And just, like, seeing how he held himself, you know, decades after he got out and the pride he had. I was like that. And then I started talking with a recruiter. I was a sophomore, so I'm about 15. You know, they come to high schools. Unfortunately, because of the way their rules are, they can't actually talk to you. They can answer some questions. But then I want to say it's, like, around 16, they can actually talk to you and, hey, this is something you want to do. And so at 17, you can sign with parental consent. And my parents were very pro-college. And so my 18th birthday, first of the morning, I'm standing outside my recruiter's office. And she, what are you doing here? I'm like, I'm here to sign my papers, ma'am. She goes, happy birthday. And so it's getting in, you have to meet a bunch of requirements. The Marine Corps is actually one of the more stricter branches for joining, being the smallest branch. So they go into, like, your criminal history, mental health, all that. So, like, I was, like, a prime candidate. I was, at the time, oh, man, I was 5'8", 145 pounds, no tattoos, never been arrested, never had a traffic ticket. I didn't do drugs in high school, none of that. And they're like, sweet, dude. Streamlined everything. And so then I signed, and funny enough, actually, right before that, I had gotten a non-moving violation that even it was a obstructed rear plate, super simple. Even that prevented me from swearing in to the delayed entry program.
Wow.
I'd actually go back and fix that. Went back up to Albany. I'm from New York originally. Finally got all that fixed. They take blood samples, urine samples. They make sure you can do, like, minimum 5 pull-ups if you're a male. Don't remember what flexed arm hang was at the time for female. It's going back about 6 years. And then for us, we had to go to physical training or PT. For us, like, every Thursday after high school. And then once every month, we'd get in, and they would train us. They would go over physical training. They teach us basic stuff that we're going to learn in boot camp anyways. And then finally, I did that for about 8 months. And then around October, assigned July. In October, the new fiscal year started, and the job list came out. I got the job I wanted, which was Marine Corps Security Force, and went to boot camp in February of 2014. I was 2nd Battalion Hotel Company, Platoon 2037, words I will never forget. And it's interesting because some of it's kind of secretive. Like, we get Marines that come back from boot camp, and they'll come by the recruiting office and, like, help out while they're on leave. And, you know, it's like, these are trying to pick their brains. And they're not asked, oh, what's the rifle range like? What's the food like? And they're like, oh, the food type's pretty good. The rifle range's easy. Just listen to your instructors. And then the culminating event of Marine Corps recruit training is called the Crucible. Basically, it's a 54-hour kind of endurance course that tests a lot of stuff you've learned, test your teamwork. There's minimal sleep, minimal food. You have to, like, ration food out, where if you mess up and you eat it all that first day, it's not going to be fun. And that's kind of an experience everyone has to do themselves. They're, I know when I came back and talked to the poolie is a term used to someone who is enlisted but who can't be yet in the Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. So I was talking to them, like, oh, sir, what's the crucible like? I'm like, don't worry about that. Y'all got to get there and do it yourself. It's something that is very dear to you. I remember it's a bunch of events that I just won't forget. It's very physically and mentally challenging. It's a lot of strategy. So one event, I cannot think of the name of it, but you have to get a, like, 45-pound can across this, like, obstacle course without it ever touching the ground. And so you end up having to, like, take your belt off, tie, like, climb over a wall, have someone else hoist it up, pull it up, get everyone over the wall, and hand it down. And it just makes you think outside the box, because the place we go, you may or may not have a plan. We always say, plan A is going to go to shit. So that then is going through it. It's, you know, every part of you, you know, wants to quit. From the second you get on Paris Island, a drill instructor comes on the bus and just starts screaming at you. And it's, you know, 11 o'clock at night. You haven't slept all day because you're super nervous. You barely ate. And all of a sudden, there's this random person you've never seen before scream at you. And they're intimidating. You know, that's the point. And so you put your head down, feel the bus make all these random turns. And the driver is literally just going in big circles, so you can't try and count turns and escape. And you get off, and there's yellow footprints. And I remember thinking, I immediately regret this decision, because there's all this folk are yelling at you, and it's chaos, you're confused. You get in, then do some paper real quick, and then next thing you know, you're sitting in a barber's chair and they're shaving your head off.
Right. This is the mindset that's going into what it's taking to be a Marine. But let me ask you, was you ever scared for your life as a Marine? Have you ever, like, been there and saw fear come over some of your men or yourself?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we unfortunately sometimes the communication isn't the best. I remember one time I was with a special embassy detachment, and some bad intel came out, and we were like, oh God, this is gonna be bad. And we're like, let's go. And then we were running upstairs to the top of the ship, and we had called off, like, hey, nope, download your ammo, bad intel. And it's just, I mean, I feel like the fear is healthy. I feel like if you don't have that fear, something's not exactly connecting your brain. But at the same time, it's not so much fear for yourself. It's fear for your brothers. Because I trained one time, and I had a dream. We were engaging targets, and the other squad was going to cut in and, like, get close to targets. So we cut our fire, and this kid still had his muzzle pointed there. The other Marine told him, put your muzzle down. He was like, no. They argued. And I was on the other side of the line, so I didn't hear. And I remember screaming at them later in the day. That stuff like that is what gets Marines killed. I don't, you know, I don't care if I get sent home in a box. But I don't know what I'm going to do if I have to send one of my Marines home. I had Marines that were, you know, at the time I was 21, 22. I had Marines that were 8 years old. I didn't do that 17. And it's, you know, later getting home and, you know, possibly having looked that kid's mom in the eye and say, hey, I'm sorry. You know, that's what the fear is. It's not very, like, you know, a lot of us, I don't say we're reckless, but we cared more for the dude to your left than your right than you did for yourself.
Wow, that's crazy. I can understand. I can even feel that, man. That's kind of deep when you talk about, you know, the things you're dealing with in there and, you know, what Marines are, you know, thinking while there. You know, they're thinking about their brother. They're thinking about the man next to them. That's a selfless act, man. I think that's why we can't do enough but thank men and women of the service. It's like we want to do more, but I know that sometimes a simple thank you is more than anything, but sometimes that just doesn't seem like enough. But I wanted to go somewhere else with this and ask you. I'm a man that loves to travel. I like going places, and I know Marines get to go a lot of good places, man. Just kind of touching on something a little different, man. Where are some places you've been? And was it fun? Like, tell me about that.
I was really blessed. I got an opportunity to see the world. My second deployment alone, I want to say I tagged 8 or 9 countries.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorites, though, was Japan.
Mm-hmm.
I was forward deployed to our embassy operations to Yokosuka, Japan, which is a naval base about an hour-ish away from Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
And just the culture of the Japanese people is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
For one, they are super respectful. I remember we were lost on the train throughout the wrong station, and all the signs are in kanji, the Japanese lettering, and we're looking, none of us have cell service trying to translate it, and we knew like the most bare basic Japanese, like I couldn't really even ask for directions.
Couldn't even say thank you.
No, I did that. Domo arigato gozaimasu. That burned. But I remember going out to an older gentleman who's the only one in the train station, Sinimasen, which I believe was, excuse me, he looks like Yokosuka Naval Base.
Mm-hmm.
And us being white and not Japanese, the guy's like, oh, well, these are probably Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, train 3, 2 stops, train like 6, 1 stop. Like, hi, domo gozaimasu. And sure enough, that gentleman got us right to our train station. The food in Japan ruined me. I can no longer eat ramen noodles because I had actual Japanese ramen.
Oh, because you had the real deal.
Yeah, I had actual Japanese ramen. But my favorite was Coco's curry.
Coco curry. I'm a big fan of food, man. I'm a foodie.
I loved Coco's. When I was in Thailand, we ended up like Airbnb-ing a villa. And the lady that owned it was like, oh, I have a friend who's a chef if you guys want, you know, to hire them.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing with Thailand is, with their economy is, for us, is very, very cheap.
Yeah.
So we, you know, fork over a couple hundred baht. And this gentleman came in with just an ungodly amount of food. There's like 13 of us, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember the whole like dinner table was being piled with all like fish, chicken, all this food. And that's, I love food.
Yeah, I love food too, man. I travel for food.
Right? And just getting experience, you know, the culture. And, you know, the best way to experience the culture is over food.
Oh, man.
Has transcended generations.
Anthony Bourdain is my favorite, you know, one of my idols, man. And I read his stuff and watch his videos. And, yeah, he used to visit many countries specifically for the food.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not like you go to a restaurant. Like, I remember being in California visiting a friend, and we went to a Thai restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And the food, it was good food in L.A., I think. But it wasn't authentic.
Mm-hmm.
Versus being in Thailand, having in a not very touristy destination either, having a Thai chef make us food, and we didn't ask for food.
Mm-hmm.
We asked for, we didn't say, "Oh, make me this, please."
Yeah.
He just made food. These are traditional Thai meals,
right.
And it's amazing.
Wow, We have to go. I have to go there. Is Thailand a communist regime, communist country?
No. I want to say they have a king.
Yeah.
I want to say it's a monarchy, but I don't know if his position is a figurehead or if he actually has power. But I don't believe they're communists.
What about our president? Do you think he's a communist?
I mean, I wouldn't say a communist. But I mean, I think I told you I'm not a fan of most politicians, left, yeah, right, or in the middle. All I can say is the economy has been very well.
Yeah.
President Trump, you know, is a businessman.
Yeah.
So he the economy has gone up. You know, unemployment's low. I mean, those are always good signs. GDP is starting to go up.
Yeah.
You know, we're bringing jobs back to America, which is great.
As a Marine who serves under the command of the Commander in Chief, do you think President? Do you like your Commander in Chief tweeting, or do you like your Commander in Chief being a little bit more reserved with his opinions?
I mean, so my job when I was in was to go where I was told.
Mm-hmm.
And so it didn't matter if he was on Twitter saying this. I mean, like, so the fact of the matter is we have the most powerful military on the face of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
We really do, you know, and that's going back. And part of that is backed up to our civilian population. You know, having a all-volunteer force, mm-hmm, allows us to have people who want to be there. And when we had the draft, you had draft dodgers, yeah, so now we got to track them down. You people just didn't want to be there. You know, yeah, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of folk in the military who, you know, found out what the military is like and they didn't like it. They don't want to be there. You know, mm-hmm. We've all had those days. But as far as, you know, if he's tweeting this, tweeting that, it's no country is going to try to invade us. I mean, yeah, you go back to World War II. The reason Japan didn't invade the mainland was, mm-hmm, there'd be a rifle behind every blade of grass.
Hmm.
You know, this country, you know, we are one of three countries on earth that constitutionally protects the right to keep and bear arms.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that keeps us powerful. You know, you got good old Texas boys that grew up shooting, you know, mm-hmm, squirrels and hogs on the farm.
Hmm.
You throw them in the military and they're hitting targets at 500, 600, 700, 800 meters without a problem.
Wow. Wow. Do you think politics has a place in sports?
To an extent, yes and no. I mean, there's a point where these athletes are, you know, role models to young kids. You know, I remember growing up, I want to be like Mike. Well, mm-hmm, I'm short. That didn't happen. But these politicians, or not, these athletes, don't always set the best examples.
Yeah.
And these kids see that.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the athletes get off relatively scot-free, and these kids go, oh, hey, he did, you know, so-and-so, and he was fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go out and do it. But I don't really think the government should be spending all this time, like, steroids and sports. It's like, they're professional athletes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They want to, you know, because the knowledge is out there.
Yeah.
It's people who take steroids, you know, there's a proper medical way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to do that, I mean, I honestly, yeah, that's, you're going to do something and it's only hurting yourself.
Yeah.
Who am I to say don't do that? Like, that's your body, that's your life. If it doesn't affect me,
mm-hmm,
I'm not going to waste my time.
Speaking of medical, what do you think about, like, veterans who come out and get barely any help for mental health issues? Like, I know a lot of men that, people generally, but I know a lot of vets. I've known vets that killed themselves due to, you know, PTSD, and they couldn't, you know, live with the trauma. Tell me about the mental health issues going on with vets, and I think that's something important we can talk about.
Yeah. So right now, statistically, every day, 22 veterans and one active duty service member take their life every single day. Mm. And the thing is, most of these veterans are Vietnam veterans. Mm. And part of that contributes to numerous things. Number one, the way they were treated when they came home. You know, like, they were spat on. They're called baby killers. Mm. Versus, you know, today, you know, you see Budweiser throwing a parade for some, you know, lieutenant who just got home. Yeah. Which, it's great to see public support. Mm-hmm. Some of the traumas service members go through today, you know, they don't want to go through that again. And one thing that I'm honestly real surprised about is the number of Medal of Honor recipients who continue to, you know, fight their demons. You know, they already went through something extremely traumatic. I think 50% of recipients died in the act that earned them the Medal of Honor. And for the other half that don't, you know, years later, because it's such a long process, here they are getting drugged in front of the entire nation, living that day, those days. Reading Marcus Luttrell's book, Lone Survivor.
Yeah.
He talks, now he was a Navy Cross recipient. He talks about hearing in every, like, he hears his friends, Danny Dietz, screaming as he's killed. And I was actually on the phone with the VA today. And the first thing they say is, you know, if you're experiencing medical emergency, hang up, dial 911. If you need the Veterans Crisis Line, press 7. And, like, every time you connect somewhere, like, you know, if you're in fear for your life, you know, press 7. And everyone wants to, you know, get that warm and fuzzy of, oh, we're helping veterans by putting this out. But it's a problem.
Yeah.
It's veterans are coming home, getting out, and you're in that environment of still being in. You're hanging out at the barracks every night with your boys who are in the same boat as you are. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone experiences it. And then all of a sudden, one day, you sign a piece of paper, they shake your hand, say thank you.
Hmm.
You get in your base. And at first, like, woohoo, I'm out. And then you know, get a new job, go to school. And I remember for me, I went through this little, like, depression. I was never suicidal, but it feels like part of me was missing.
Yeah.
You know, I spent from 18 to 23 years old, I was in the Marine Corps. I was a Marine. I still am. Mm-hmm. But that was who I was, because you dedicate your life, your entire life to it, because you can't think of, like, all these other stuff. You know, that's, you wake up, you're in the barracks. You lay, get dressed, walk outside, and you're at work. You get off work, you just walk inside, that's it. You never really leave. So, you know, you get out, and it's this whole new world. You know, everyone's, like, saying, oh, I'm above you, or I'm this, I'm that, versus in the military, you know. So that guy over there, he's a sergeant. I'm a corporal. He's higher than me. But that guy, PFC, I'm above him. And it's not a power thing. That's the rank structure.
Hmm.
They're a higher rank than you. They say something, you do it. Civilian world's like who's in charge here? Service. And it can be very confusing. And then dealing with traumas on top of that is just too much. And there is help out there. The VA has been getting better. Like I said, I'm in Asheville area. The Asheville VA is a 5-star VA, and they're really good at what they do. Other VAs, though, are broken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unfortunately, a large number of veterans who go into a VA and say, hey, I'm having suicidal thoughts. And, okay, cool. Here's a prescription for antidepressants. Call us in 6 months. And they'll try it. It doesn't work. They go back in and it's like, well, it has been 6 months yet.
Mm-hmm.
Kill themselves. And I just don't understand how someone who, you know, I don't know who it is offhand, but whoever runs the VA system, I don't know how that person can sleep at night knowing that veterans have killed themselves in the parking lot of the very facility that's supposed to help them.
So it's safe to say that we can definitely be doing more, no doubt about that, to help our men and women. Is there a time, Ben, that you can think about where you were having such a good time as a Marine? Where was the time where you were proud and you were having fun to be a Marine? Take us into that, to that story. Take us into the mindset of a time where you were proud to be a Marine.
So I remember my second deployment, we were conducting MC operations, and we would go in kind of plain clothed, and I would conduct briefings with different Department of State personnel and local Guard Force employees, and we would teach them basic first aid medicine, kind of like what to do in a active shooter bombing, you know, them getting attacked. And I remember having a young lady come up to me, and she introduced herself, and she was, you know, I've been here for about a year. And, you know, they get briefed on, like, Benghazi and all this stuff. And she's like, I've been scared about that. But, you know, knowing this, like, the stuff we taught them, and knowing that if something happened, we were the 911, and we were coming in guns hot. She said maybe for her feel safer. And actually, Fuzzy comes later. One MCI visit was Sri Lanka. And this is back 2016, excuse me. And we went over a bunch of stuff. One was a bomb protocol. And I found out a few months ago, in Easter, ISIS bombed several churches in Sri Lanka. The embassy wasn't a target, but I have no doubt that they implemented a bomb protocol and did stuff that we taught them. And I hope it made those folk feel safe. And it's a terrible tragedy. I'm really upset it happened, but knowing that I gave them that training is a little warm fuzz, hey, I did something.
Man, that's pretty cool, because you knowing that that's the reason you're there, the reason you're in the service, the reason you are a Marine is to just go in and make a difference and feel good about yourself. I like to just take a moment real quick and just talk a little bit off the Marine mindset ideology right now, and just go into the time that we spent together at the camp and just enjoying listening to you tell these crazy random stories, man. You like a jack-in-the-box, Pandora's box full of stories. And how did you become so good, man, at just knowing how to just naturally be a great storyteller? Like, that was just funny, that stuff.
So in the Marine Corps, we there's actually a lot of downtime. We call it hurry up and wait. So, like, if there's a hike at, you know, noon, we're outside at 4 a.m. And so you spend a lot of time with this very tight-knit group of guys passing the time. And a lot of times we didn't have our phones on us to play games. And so we just sat and shared stories, you know, kind of like how history has been passed down. America still has a huge history of oral tradition. And so I think maybe just doing that, just telling stories of them and being these experiences that have changed my life and really impacted me and stuck with me. Going that, looking at these kids, just kind of, it works. Part of it's got to know your audience. Finding the funny stuff in rough times. And because, I mean, like, especially that job, if you in the moment working these kids, it's like, oh my god, I'm freaking out. And then at the end of the shift, you're like, hey, you remember when that happened, how funny that was?
Right. There was a lot of those moments, man, where you know, it doesn't seem funny at the time, but in the moment, but you get away from it, give it some time to heal. And you just sit back and laugh at things, you know, never really take life too serious. And that's kind of how I see you. It's like, man, you found a great balance of, you know, some sort, because you were living a life where it was all intense, all serious, go, 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 go. And then now you're living this life where it's like you're working with students, you're out in nature, you're being loose, you're having fun. How did you marry those things? How did you separate? I think that's a bigger one. How did you separate the Marine mindset to coming back into this? Because I think that's where a lot of other soldiers and other Marines and people that serve in the armed forces, I think that's where they're stuck at, in that gray area. How did you transition over back into this loving life you have?
So one of our sayings in the Corps was improvise, adapt, and overcome. And yeah, make do what you got. And so I was an NCO. I was a non-commissioned officer, and I led Marines, you know, and, you know, every person is different. And so part of that is knowing how to lead the different types of Marines I had, because the military is a melting pot of every culture, every religion, every, you know, occupation, hobby. And so what, you know, works for this dude, man, it works for that dude. Mm-hmm. And we're transitioning from this, you know, if I want something done and I yell at them, they're going to get it done quick, fast, in a hurry. Come over to camp, though, if I yell at them, that could, you know, these are therapy kids, you know, can maybe pass traumas or something. But the one thing I loved to do in the Marine was mentor. Mm-hmm. And so coming to this job, that was my goal, was mm-hmm. to be able to mentor these youth. Mm-hmm. And part of that is just getting to know them. You know, you can't just jump in and start doing stuff. You have to really connect with them first, get that vibe from them, and see what they need. Mm-hmm. You know, some of these kids need a little more firmness, and some need to, like, come off of it and, like change the tone of your voice a little bit softer. And some kids, like I said, you can talk firm to. So it's just being able to read the situation and read each person.
Mm. So with that being said, then, what is something you're doing outside the Marines that is that you are dedicating your life to? Something that's meaningful, that gives you a sense of purpose?
I mean, I really do love working with these kids. I've always, like I said, I always loved mentoring. I always loved being able to teach someone from, like, even my mistakes. Because, you know, if I open up this kid about the times I was a dumbass when I was their age and tell them, hey, it didn't work out that well for me, and if I can connect that to them, hopefully they're not going to make those mistakes. And then, you know, 10, 15 years down the road, they're in my position, and they take the knowledge I pass to them. And remember, hey, this dude opened up. He's vulnerable to me. I get it for this next generation. And then they pass down my knowledge and advice, come out like their mistakes, but that now third generation, it's just going to snowball. And, you know, you're going to get people who are, number one, more educated about life. And they're going to be a better person.
I like that you got a purpose, a sense of purpose. That kind of gives me a go ahead to, you know, ask, you know, I like to go into, you know, usually I have three questions I like to ask my guests toward the end of the show. And before I do that, I always tell my guests to go into what I call the flow. And flow means, if you spell it FLOW, it's an acronym for feeling love operate within. You've answered, you know, the reasons why you were a Marine and you're passionate about being a Marine. Before I have you go into that flow session real quick, I want to ask you this so we know, as citizens, what is something that you think us regular people could do to help you guys that's coming out of the service and what can we do to help the servicemen that's coming, servicemen and women that are coming out, to better the situation, as far as mental health or whatever?
For one, I mean, you see a veteran, like, go up to them, like, shake their hand and just, like, thank you for your service. For a lot of folk, though, it is an awkward question because of, you don't know what their career's been like, you know, what they've had to go through. But it's more than that. If you really want to thank a veteran, go be an American that's worth fighting for. You know, you see these people today who are...
Whoa, that was catchy.
Arguing in the street. I can't take credit for that. I saw that on Facebook.
Okay. That's still powerful, man, that you remember that.
So, you know, you see these folks, these Americans in the streets are, you know, the left and the right, they're at each other's throats, you know, over this, that, and the other. And this country isn't about that. This country's not about fighting each other. You know, you look at, you know, times like, you know, post 9/11, New York, a city known for being, you know, aggressive and rude, they came together. You know, it's, you know, we're fighting over petty shit, you know? And it's like, there's so much more stuff we could be doing. You know, people are, like, some, honestly, like right now, this Area 51 crap. Like, people are doing that, and the left's calling out the right about it, and the right's calling out the left about it. It's like, I just want to use some common sense. If you storm Area 51, that's not going to work out well for you. But it's people just arguing with each other and being mean and nasty to each other. You know, like, it's so much easier to just be kind to each other and do good things.
I like that. Like,
you see these folks, some people get greedy. Like, guys like Bernie Madoff had an opportunity to really help some folk and get some income for some folk, and instead he took the money and ran. Stole, I don't know how many hundreds of millions of dollars. It's like, you can only buy so many things. And you're able for it. You know, I don't know, having nice things is nice. But at the same time, I live in a 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom house. And this is all I need. You know, I'm 24. This is it. I don't need all this stuff. Instead, I can use that time and energy to do something that helps others. Like, hey, you know what? I got a little extra money at the end of the month. You know, like, hey, there's this cause out here that rebuild schools after natural disasters and restocks libraries. And so, like, do stuff like that. Like, be somebody that, you know, like, sees people as if they meet each other. You know, overseas, we get internet now. It's technology's changed. I can log on to Facebook overseas, and I see videos of people, like, calling someone a Nazi just because they disagree with them. And darn, there are some legitimate Nazis in the United States.
Right.
But it's just if someone's a conservative white male, doesn't make them a Nazi. Doing that, it's like,
I like that.
You know, we're out here, you know, away from our families, you know, 4 months to a year plus sometimes during your unit deployment, and y'all are back home acting a fool. How does that make us feel out there living in, you know,
protecting us? So for us, we just need, as citizens, we just need to be more appreciative. And that's just the bottom line. Just more respectful that you guys are, even if we don't agree politically, and I'm talking to the audience who will be listening to this later, even if we don't agree politically with the stands of the country and as far as what the president may decide or where our Marines go or whatever, I think it's more important that we acknowledge the fact that these men are doing and fighting for a cause that they believe in, and they're choosing to give up their family time, their time with their children, time with their wives, time with their loved ones, time just having a little bit more freedom that you and I get to enjoy. So I think bottom line, when we see a Marine, it's more than just, you know, say thank you. It's just show a great deal of respect and understand that that man is giving up a lot more, sacrificing a lot more. That woman is giving up a lot more because black, white, or indifferent, like you said, the Marine Corps is a melting pot, diversity and culture. And that means there's a lot of different people in the Marines, black, white, and indifferent. So I think we need to stand on the fact that not just white people giving up their lives, there are black people in the Marines giving up their lives, there are Spanish, Hispanic, there are Asians, there are lots of people in the Marines sacrificing for this country because they believe that this country is the catalyst and can be the catapult to being good and being kind. And that goes to your other point that you said, it's so much easier to be kind to each other because I talked about being kind last night. And I just think that if we are natural givers and being kind, then everything is right. If everything is right with us, then everything is right with the world. And that's what I want to leave on my statement. But I want to go into getting bent, to go into his flow, because this was a great interview, man. You came in and you held your own, you held your spot, you held your position. And I appreciate that, man. You gave my audience, you gave me, you gave us something to really sit on and ponder. But with that being said, I want to know, for Ben, what is in his heart. And this is a moment, Ben, where you just get to talk to the audience. I call it the flow. Feeling love, operate within. That means go from wherever your heart is telling you to go from and just speak to audience some words that you want to impart on them, something you would want them to know and carry, if not for the rest of their life, but for a portion. Say, hey, take this advice or something. I'm giving you the floor. Take a minute to do that, Ben.
So one thing is kind of like for the businesses, like this America, this is a free country, but you know, it's kind of, I find it funny is, you know, we have Independence Day sales and whatever, President Day sales, that's fine, but we have Memorial Day sales. I don't know how. I mean, if you want to get a good deal, go for it. To me, it's like, I got some friends that I lost, and just this business being like, oh, hey, celebrate Memorial Day by saving 40% on the couch. It's kind of, it's rough, and I am by no means asking the business to stop doing that. If they want to do that, that's their free choice to do that. I think that's a great way to honor those who have fallen, because Memorial Day is not Veterans Day. Memorial Day is not Veterans Day. Memorial Day is to honor those who have fallen. Mm-hmm. It's mid-July, and actually 2 days ago, the 4th anniversary of a friend of mine, Lance Corporal Squire Wells. He was killed in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. By an active shooter on July 16, 2015. Mm-hmm. And it's stuff like that, you know, like for a lot of folk in the military, there's more than one Memorial Day. Mm-hmm. And those families, those Gold Star families have lost a family member, every day is Memorial Day. Mm-hmm. And it's something that they live with. And it's just kind of like going on a thing of like be a good person. You know, there was a buddy of mine was talking about some video he saw the other day. A soldier was in his camis, his uniform, and he was out shopping with his wife and child. And seeing these people who like scream at him over a parking spot or something, and it's just like, I guess it's like, you're supposed to be serving us and this. And these people just have such a negative view of the troops, which, I mean, if I understand some people may not agree with the war. That's your choice. And every year for Memorial Day, I post on social media Imager just a simple list of the names and dates of my brothers. And I've had a lot of hateful comments. Oh, this is an illegal war, or this, and these people aren't heroes and murderers. And going on with that, whether you agree with the war or not, is you have somebody here who is willing to die for people they don't know. And I'm not trying to put Sergio on a pedestal because we're people. We put our pants on one leg at a time. Our pants look different. We have human problems. We have marriage. We have divorce. We have childbirth and loss. We're on divorce. Unfortunately, the Marine Corps is like an 80% divorce rate. But it's normal people. And part of that is some folk will like have these judgments of, that's a he's scary, this, that, and the other. I know Marines that sat behind the desk and did admin for 4 years in the paper. They're still a Marine, they're still my brother and sister. But it's like going back to thanking veterans. Don't say thank you, like talk to them. You know, so like, what was your job in the Marine Corps? And I got to, I was a boat fuel specialist. They filled aircraft. They did, culinary. They did finance. They did PR. They did photography. They did. We have 42 job fields in the Marine Corps. One of those is a bunch more jobs, and it's such a diverse area. I've heard people say, "Oh, military's racist." I mean, I don't know how you can be racist. I never once gave a shit fuck or faith about my left. I can only do it. You got my six. Hey, I got your six. Cool. And that dude had my six. And I've stood shoulder with white Marines, black Marines, Hispanic, Asian, Native American, Catholic, Jewish,
Protestant.
It's we frankly don't give a fuck what anyone's creed or race is, and it's not like in a bad way. It's we value you as a person.
Yes.
Like what do you bring to the table?
What they're saying is there's no atheists in the foxhole, right?
No, there aren't.
Man, listen. I really want to take you into my three questions that I usually ask every guest at the end of the show, man. If you listen to my podcast, you know the three questions I'd love to ask because we kind of want to know where you're at right now on stage. So one question I always ask, or three, but the first one is, what is one thing that Ben is most grateful for?
I am probably most grateful for meeting the brothers I did. My best friend in the world, I was stationed with him for a little over 2 years, I want to say, through two schoolhouses, a unit. We did two deployments together. So I've known him about 5 years now. I am so much closer with him than the guys I've known since first grade. I'm so grateful that I've met some of the most amazing people in the world.
Wow. Pretty cool, man. Pretty cool. Ben, if you was left with one book, one song, or one movie for the rest of your life, which one is it? Or let me say it another way. Is there one book, one movie, or one song that still inspires you today?
My favorite movie is Forrest Gump, because like
classic.
No matter what life threw at him, because you look at Forrest, he was mentally challenged. He had not schizophrenia, he's scoliosis, excuse me, and he had all these like awful things I was throwing at him. He just, I'll just keep on running. He just had this positive mindset, and it's like that always teaches me like. You know, no matter how much life sucks, it's like if you sit there and bitch about it, it's not gonna get any better.
No, man, that's pretty cool. That movie is a classic, man. No matter how many times I watch it, man, it's always got some phrases in there I find myself just bringing me back to my childhood, having me repeat again. But good classic movie, man. But one more I like to ask is, and that is, we all have people in our lives that have majorly impacted or influenced our lives, and there are many people. I could say name, you know, all those people, but I always want to put the emphasis on you just naming one, you know, not to name all of them. Name one person that has greatly impacted and influenced your life.
My old platoon sergeant, he was staff sergeant, my first unit, and we had like three different platoon sergeants before we got him, because they kept, like, we were a rowdy bunch, and they kept getting in trouble, and they kept bringing new guys in to try and get some discipline, and fix us. Mm-hmm. And this guy comes in, and day one we did like a 6-mile run. And he turns around, and the whole time I had it right behind him. And he kind of took me under his wing, and he mentored me a lot. He told me when I'd messed up, for sure. He gave me the good amount of praise when I did something good. And, I mean, to this day, if he called, I'd go. I respect him immensely, and just he cared, which is the biggest thing. He truly did care about us as a unit and me as an individual, as he did all of us.
Wow. I appreciate that, Ben. This is where I want to say, before I go into my moments that I do, or I appreciate you, the guest, is there a way that people can find you, like list off your social media contacts where people can find you, and that way people can follow you and know more about you?
Yeah, sure. I am on Twitter. I have to look it up. I don't use Twitter that much. Give me.
Yeah.
I am. Twitter is Rip It Mania, RIPIT Mania, and I am also on TikTok. Funny enough, my username on there is Bear Slut.
Bear Slut on TikTok. Okay.
Yeah.
So supposedly you got some funny things on TikTok, but I'll check that out. But this is where I end by saying to you, Ben, number one, I appreciate you. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your kindness. Thank you for your generosity. Thank you for giving your life, putting it on the line. Thank you to your brothers and sisters who fought in that, in those front lines with you. I can see a heart for people. You have a heart for life. You have a heart for caring for others, and it carries over into your personality. You are funny. You have made me laugh on numerous occasions. You've made the kids laugh on numerous occasions. You're a great storyteller, and for that, for those qualities, don't stop being Ben. Continue being Ben. And I just shower you with much praise, with much appreciation, with much respect, with much duty and diligence that we owe to you as a people. And just, I praise you for just going all out, man, and doing it the hard way. Thank you. And I send positivity your way, and hope that everything you achieve, you go for, you achieve, and you become successful. Thank you for that, Ben. Yes. So I'll be in touch with you soon, brother. Thank you.
I have talked to you soon.
Salute, soldier.
Simplify.
All right, brother. Good night.
Good night.